Yeah, brief story about Robbie Williams, who sings that song Angels, which was an international hit. The stories in the UK papers this week about Robbie. I guess there was this British tycoon who threw a gigantic $15 million birthday party for himself and his 21-year-old daughter. They flew 150 guests. Leo DiCaprio, Simon Cowell, Gwyneth Paltrow, and the likes of those folks flew them all to Cancun to an exclusive resort. And they brought in entertainment, Stevie Wonder, Michael Bublé, Santana, CeeLo, all these international megastars, including Robbie Williams. And according to the press reports, Robbie Williams blew the roof off the place. Standing ovations blew away all the other entertainers who were there. I mention it only because, as I've said before, he's a good friend of the program here, listens to Coast on a regular basis, one of our members of our Insiders Club. So we kind of root for him to do well. We're talking about wild horses and the controversy about how they should or shouldn't be managed in America. Craig Downer, the author of The Wild Horse Conspiracy, will be sticking around to rejoin us, but we're shifting gears just a little bit. There's a fairly ambitious idea to at least solve part of the wild horse problem. That is the backlog of horses that exist in government pens. They get stuck in these pens. They live their whole lives there. They never get adopted out, or very few of them do. Compared to how many are rounded up and stuck in these pens, they cost us millions and millions and millions of dollars. We feed them for the rest of their lives, and BLM won't change this routine. So there's an idea to fix it by creating an eco sanctuary here in Nevada. Madeline Pickens has already spent millions and millions of dollars of her own money to get this thing on, but BLM will not go along with it. The guy who is spearheading this fight along with Madeline Pickens is Jerry Reynoldson, and he joins us in just a moment to pick up the conversation from there. I'm George Knapp. This is Coast to Coast AM. Jerry Reynoldson has been a horse person most of his life. He first became interested in issues surrounding the Mustangs when he helped organize a Senate hearing, U.S. Senate hearing back in 1990, to look into various aspects of the Wild Horse and Burro program. More recently, he's formed two nonprofit corporations to focus on some of these issues. And as I mentioned earlier, he's been a principal advocate for the creation of an eco sanctuary that's backed by a philanthropist, Madeline Pickens, focusing here on northern Nevada, where it could house thousands and thousands of horses and relieve some of the overcrowding. Jerry, good to have you here.
Good morning, George.
Hey, I don't know if you heard much of Craig's discussion, but he has called it a wild horse conspiracy. Is it fair to say it's a conspiracy, or is that hyperbole?
Well, I don't know if conspiracy is the right word. Certainly, there are forces at work here to maintain the status quo and not look in new areas to develop new ideas for sanctuaries. We recently had an announcement about one in Wyoming that was referred to as a milestone, when in fact it's a continuation of the long-term holding policy that the BLM has embraced for decades now. And the thing that we need to all be looking for is a way out of this trap. As you said in your lead-up, this thing is costing $70 to $80 million, and the bill's going up every year that the taxpayers are paying for the system as it's being currently run. And it's a no-brainer that we need to seek out new and innovative ways to hold these horses in the latter part of their years. And certainly somebody like Madeline Pickens, that wants to invest $12 or $13 million of her own money, of private money, to try to, you know, move in a new direction and set the stage for doing business differently, should be getting serious consideration. On the other hand, it seems like we're just doing business as usual.
Let's talk about why that's the case. You deal with BLM on a regular basis. You know there are some good people in there who would like to fix this thing. They know the program is broken. It doesn't work for taxpayers. It doesn't work for horses. It doesn't work for a public range. But their voices get drowned out. Why is that?
I think there's an institutional problem within the hierarchy of the BLM. And when I say the hierarchy, mainly at the state level, not necessarily the federal level. I think that there are some creative thinkers at the federal level, but it never translates down to the state level. And much of that has to do, I believe, with the fact that the programs at the state level are run by folks who are ranchers, who have been BLM employees since this program came into existence 40 years ago. And there's a bias there that you know, favors the ranching perspective, which largely is one of let's remove these horses, let's get them out of here, including, you know, and if we need to slaughter, let's do that too. And, you know, you don't want to paint a broad brush over every rancher and say they all hate the wild horses. The opposition, the organized opposition that you see to making changes in the program, for the most part, comes from or is supported by the ranching industry. So you've got a number of people in positions of power at the state level, from many of the state directors on down, that are ranchers in their private lives. And there's just no escaping it. It's held up and prevented change for years and years.
Well, you know, I've known some ranchers who say, hey, BLM is no friend of mine. BLM does nothing but cause us trouble. So I guess they're not, BLM is not pro-rancher in every regard, maybe just on this particular issue.
I think when it comes to horses, you know, we're talking about economics here. Any grass that the horse eats is grass that a cow on the public lands can't eat. And again, it's unfair to just say that all ranchers are bad or the ranching way of life is bad. To the contrary, I think it's a great way of life. I just think the competition for public lands and resources is so intense, and the horses don't generate any revenue for anybody. Nobody makes money off of them. You can't hunt them. And so it's the quandary is, you know, who is going to advocate for the horses? The other failure is not just at the BLM level, at the state level. It's the failure of Congress. It's the failure of our leaders in the House and the Senate, and there are a few champions, but never enough to muster a consensus to support making serious changes to the Wild Horse and Burro program. So we've got the challenge of a failed leadership on that side of the coin, and what we see at the state level, it basically holds up. Mrs. Pickens' plan, I can most assuredly tell you, is being held up by people in the state offices. It has support in the BLM hierarchy, but not in the state offices.
Well, let's talk about that. Now, give us an update on where it stands, because the last time Mrs. Pickens was on more than a year ago here, and she told us what she wanted to do, but she's done a lot of it since then. So where it stands right now?
Well, when the request for proposal went out, formal request, as you know, George, we're nearing 4 years in this effort. And during that time, you know, we talked specifics with the BLM at every level about the proposed plan and what it would entail, what it would include. So then when a formal RFP come out, it's almost as if we never had a discussion and we've got to revisit everything from ground zero. And we have, and she's made a formal response, and that was months ago. And we continue to get inquiries back about you didn't cross this T or dot this I. But she's remained engaged in this process, very serious, and made many sacrifices that the BLM has said, you know, you're going to have to go along with this, you're going to have to do this. And she said, okay. So the process is still moving forward. She's been told recently, you know, maybe another month or two before you get an answer. Not before we approve it, but before you get an answer. So as you suggested, I think in the lead up, she's invested upwards of $13 million now. And we're yet without an answer on what I think is the most creative pilot proposal out there to find a new way to manage these horses.
Well, describe what the project is that she has in mind, this eco sanctuary, because it's not just a pipe dream. I mean, since she was on the program last time, she put her money down, money on the barrel, and bought these two gigantic ranches that would be perfect for wild horses. In fact, there are horses on there now, but BLM will not give a thumbs up or thumbs down to taking more out of long-term holding and putting them out there. Tell us where the eco sanctuary stands and what she'd like to do with it.
There's always been confusion about how her program will save money, but it's very straightforward. And so your listeners understand, we have proposed to take 1,000 horses to start with, because that's what the BLM is saying, the most they'll give her. On 550,000 acres of public land on the largest ranch there. And and she would take the horses that are in short-term holding that the taxpayers are paying $5.75 a day for. She will take those horses for $1.25, which is the lowest number there is for long-term horse care. That's what the ranchers are getting down on the border of Oklahoma, is $1.25 a day. So she said, I'll save you $4.50 a day. There are
per horse
short-term horses standing right up in northern Nevada, in pens in northern Nevada. I'm talking about, 2,000 horses on 100 acres in the Palomino Valley or Ridgecrest, California. It's not hard to find these 1,000 horses. They don't have to, many of them don't have to be shipped very far. And you're saving $4.50 per horse with her proposal.
So per day.
1,000 horses, yeah. That translates to about $1,654,000. And just the numbers go up, obviously, exponentially. If you take 2,000, now you're looking at $3.2 million to save the taxpayers every year. So that's what we put on the table. Now, the other details are, where this is unlike anything else, is Madeline Pickens has put this land into a nonprofit corporation in perpetuity. She can't make any money, and this is in our proposal, that all proceeds, all the money that she would take from the BLM, the $1.25 a day, must be reinvested in the project. She can't pocket a dime of that money. Unlike the current long-term holding, where the $1.25 just goes to the ranchers and they've got to keep the fence up and the water running, essentially. So, there's some real distinct differences here that people need to be aware of. We've heard everything from, oh, our husband just wants to move. Boone wants to put windmills up there, or they're going to take water. And I mean, this stuff is so absurd and silly. But these are the things that are thrown out there to oppose this very innovative plan.
And the sanctuary itself, though, I mean, it could be a plus for the area. It could be a tourist attraction. She wants to make it a learning center. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, the idea for amenities there, it's remarkable. And another thing that you won't get with any of the current long-term holding, she plans to build a children's learning there, a learning center there, complete with, smart terminals. She wants people to be able to bring their children there and learn about the history of the horse, the history of the West, a real living museum, if you will, for people to come and visit. There will be different levels of campgrounds. There'll be a motel there, but then there'll be more primitive campgrounds there, and there'll be wagons for the public to travel out on the public land and to see not only the horses, but much of the area. So it's a complete proposal. When they say, what are you offering to the public? Just virtually everything we can. Mrs. Pickens has traveled around the country speaking to foundations, and many of them had said they'll be willing to assist with some of the buildings and the projects and the overall project, and it has a lot of support.
BLM has admitted it will work, right? I mean, reluctantly, they've admitted, all right, it will save money. It's a good idea. There are horse management areas already within the 550,000 acres. I mean, that's where horses have lived for hundreds or thousands of years. So it makes sense on a lot of levels. They know it, but they still, it's been 4 years and they won't approve it. And they say it may take another 2 years if they give it a green light to get environmental approvals.
Well, the big objection is just bringing horses back to Nevada. And again, that's coming from BLM management in the state. It's coming from the ranching community. They view this as a matter of, if we ever gather these horses and move them, we sure don't want to bring them back. And then they take that argument on to say, and it may have impacts on surrounding ranches. We have explained thoroughly where there won't be any impacts, and there won't be any impacts. This is all a fenced area, and again, these are critical differences in anything that's been proposed. This is a fenced area. There will not be any spillage over onto surrounding ranches whatsoever. There'll be a monitoring program, a daily monitoring program to inventory these horses. I think, as you know, George, she already has about 700 horses out there now that are not trying to get through any fence. They're on the smaller ranch, on the private ground on her smaller ranch. The 550,000 acres of the public land sits empty, and it's been empty for 2 years this June. There's been nothing on it, and she has the rights to use that land. But unlike others out there that, you know, support the idea of you, if you pay your own money for something, you should be able to do what you want, that doesn't seem to be the case with Madeline Pickens. You know, we hear the arguments, oh, this is going to change our way of life. I don't think one ranch and one eco-sanctuary with a few thousand horses on it can change anybody's way of life. This is all just silliness that continues to, you know, perpetuate the notion that she's not going to be a good neighbor. In fact, she spent $250,000 in the local economy right in the last year right in Wells, Nevada in Elko County. And people know this, and the people in Wells, Nevada are very appreciative of that. In fact, I'm sure there are a lot of people in Elko County that support this idea because it's new investment, it's new money, it's jobs. It's, you know, an economic boon for a place that has one dominant industry, mining, that this is a chance to do something different. So I think there's a lot of support for it.
BLM's not going to approve this, though, is it? I mean, it seems to me that they're not going to approve anything for Madeline Pickens because she's been too outspoken in her criticism of the Bureau.
Well, certainly they're reluctant to partner up with somebody that they're not certain is going to parrot the company line on a day in and day out basis. I think that's a safe thing to conclude. Well, does that mean that they're going to deny the project? I'm not convinced, and I guess, you know, when you put a lot of time into something, you want to remain somewhat optimistic about its chances to succeed. But you do get to the point where after this many years and this many miles and presentations and discussions and trying to do the right thing that somehow you're getting the rope-a-dope.
Well,
it's hard not to conclude that sometimes.
It just seems like you should be able to have some congressional pressure on them to at least give thumbs up or thumbs down, say yes or no. Because as you have said publicly before, I mean, if they say no, Madeline Pickens will proceed with some version of her plan regardless.
Absolutely. When, you know, Madeline's totally committed to this. Nobody spends $13 million on something they're going to walk from. Madeline has a lot of horses out there right now. Madeline can take the public out there and show them horses in a natural setting right now. You know, it was suggested when we started this process that we need to look in another state, that we need to look in the Midwest. We, with the Secretary of the Interior, the Director of the BLM, from the top down to the bottom, we said the right way to do this is to have an eco-sanctuary for the public in the native habitat of these wild horses, where they grow up, where they live, where they've lived for, as you said, thousands of years. And so that's why she bought the ranches in Nevada, not to invade anybody's space. I mean, you know, we were looking for large ranches. You can't, you know, buy a 2,000-acre ranch and make much of a dent in the problem. The holding, we have over 40,000 horses in holding now, George. Something has to be done, and it has to be a little bit more novel approach than what we've used in the past. So, you know, this is the right project. I mean, it's a win-win for the BLM. It's very hard to convince some people that change is good sometimes.
Well, I mean, it doesn't solve everything. It doesn't resolve all of the issues surrounding wild horses, but it is a start, at least give some hope to somehow at least solving part of the backlog.
We hear from people all the time to the website, through other social media, about people that have 1,000 acres, 600 acres, 2,000 acres that are saying we could do something like this. And we never said by any stretch that this would solve all the problems of the Wild Horse and Burro program. In fact, to the contrary, we said this, you know, takes on one area of something that needs to happen, begin to change the direction this program is moving. That was all we ever presented it to be.
All right. Jerry Reynoldson, we continue our conversation. I want to move into some bias within scientific panels, so-called scientific panels, overlooking part of this program, and bring Craig Downer back in to get his take on the Eco Sanctuary Plan. Stay with us. Much more to come here on Coast to Coast AM. We're talking about wild horses, the wild horse program with Jerry Reynoldson, who works with Madeline Pickens, trying to create an eco sanctuary for wild horses, a new approach, and with wildlife ecologist Craig Downer, who will come back in a moment and give us his take on the eco sanctuary proposals, as well as getting into some bias that is creeping into so-called scientific panels that are supposed to oversee this whole program. Then at the top of the hour, we're joined by Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center. Stay with us. Lots more to come here on Coast to Coast. Craig Downer, I want to bring you back in. I know that the ideal, in your view, would be letting horses roam wild on the public range. So you might have to wince a little bit about an eco sanctuary program. But what do you think about this as a, as an interim step, as a new direction?
Look, I've spent 4.5 years, and really it represents my whole life, more years than I like to admit. And I really encourage people to purchase my book, The Best Deal. They can either get it through me or through the Amazon.com at a very good price. But I have a whole section devoted to Pickens' offer, and I call it Pickens' offer in background of a tragic situation. You know, these poor victimized horses have been really set up. It's what I call create a crisis. It's all cynically done and intentionally. Did you realize that on the legal herd areas, they only get 83%, livestock gets 83% on average of the forage. And in many cases, it's over 90% of the forage allocation. That is on the legal herd areas of the wild horses and burros. So this is truly a squeeze play. And another thing, as I said before, the horses on these eco sanctuaries won't be truly wild horses. They will be non-reproducing herds. And in a lot of ways, semi-domesticated or even domesticated horses that, sure, I mean, they have a life. The poor victimized animals have a life. But I'm not ready to throw in the towel on the 88 million acres of legal land that by the law they should have, and they should at least have 53.5 on the BLM. I'm not willing to forget about that. That's something I was a vital part of, and while I appreciate people who care for the animals and want to see them have a life and rescue that, I think we should not make this a whitewash for the tremendous injustice that has been done and the insult to the spirit of freedom of these magnificent animals, which was the real heart and soul of the act. And, you know, you can talk all about the money in this world, but there are more important values and things at stake than money. And money isn't the measure of all things. And there is a principle here that's much more important. And I think if enough people really sat down and seriously read my book, which took me 4.5 years, it could truly make a big difference in what's going on in this nation, in this world. And these animals, the wild horses, they are tied to the soul of America, the true spirit. And the sacred intent of this act was to see them honorably have a part of the public lands in some of the least productive areas in our nation. And if we aren't that noble to do this, if we are willing to over-compromise and sugar over a lot of, basically betrayals of the act and the intention, then what are we as a people? I mean, we've really lost something important.
Okay, Craig, thank you. Back to you, Jerry, for a moment. You know, it was just a little over a year ago, we heard about the kinder, gentler BLM. Bob Abbey, the national director, says, oh, yeah, we're gonna rethink the whole wild horse program. We're going to take our time. We're going to study it. We're going to, he certainly intimated there, we're going to cut back on the roundups. And, of course, that lasted all of about 2 months, and they went back at it with greater fervor than ever. When you hear that there's going to be a National Academy of Sciences study of the program, when you hear about the appointments to the advisory board, the National Advisory Board, do you see evidence of bias that exists that's going to prevent any kind of truly honest outside scrutiny?
Well, on the NAS, yeah, there are some questionable people on there that bring views to that, two or three that yeah, I think are real problems, and there's been a lot written about that. It seems like we can't find a body anymore that's subjective enough that, you know, brings all different views and looks at this. A couple of the things that Craig mentioned, you know, as Craig said, you know, the horses started out with 53 million acres. They've had 21.5 million acres of that taken away. If we took that much land away from grazing cattle, oh my, we would hear a firestorm of controversy. There are some of these things that need to be corrected. Will the National Academy of Sciences study look at that that issue in particular? Will they look at the current AML numbers and suggest that they be revised and horses be put back out? These are questions that, you know, are real critical to the future of the program and for the wild horses. If you look at the recent appointments to the advisory board, the National Wild Horse and Burro Advisory Board, without a doubt, there's one, the woman from Colorado, who's being roundly criticized. She's represents two conservation districts that basically do work on behalf of the ranchers. She's on the board, and she's very pro-slaughter. She's a recent addition to the board. But in looking at the board, I can safely say there are four appointees to the new board that are pro-slaughter. Now, you look at this in the context of the Secretary of the Interior and the BLM Director, Bob Abbey, have both said on numerous occasions in the last year or two, and folks on down below them, they're not entertaining the idea of slaughtering horses in any way, shape, or form. Okay? But somehow four people have been added to the only board that advises the BLM on wild horse policy. Four people that support slaughter have been added to it, maybe more, four that I'm comfortable talking about. As I said, this woman, Callie Pritt Hendrickson, is associated with the ranching industry, but two more ranchers have been added to the board. So you now have three ranchers on a nine-member board and four people that are pro-slaughter. What does this tell you about, you know, what we're doing to preserve the status quo, or worse, moving in a direction that definitely won't be good for the horses if we go back to slaughter for human consumption, so that we can serve horses to France and Belgium and Japan and other places? So, yeah, I mean, you know, when you look at the science, the people that are involved directly in the policymaking aspect of this, there are a lot of cause for concern.
Where is Congress on this?
Back to Craig's comment, you know, about the sanctuary, George, I kind of want to say this. While I could agree with everything Craig said, the inescapable fact is there's 40-some thousand horses in holding. If anybody believes that those horses will get turned back out on the public lands next year, well, you know, I guess you can hope for a miracle, but that one won't happen. It's just not going to happen. Can we preserve more horses out there? One would hope so. But there's probably always going to be a need to gather some horses, to manage horses, just like you do everything else. In a perfect world, you know, I could support a lot of what Craig advocates for. But the truth is, if we can ever get Congress to move on any of this stuff an inch, we'll be real fortunate.
Well, what's the problem there? I mean, you have lobbied and spoken directly to a lot of members of Congress, senators, congressmen. And, you know, they'll at least provide lip service. Oh, yeah, we're with you. They act like they want some money from Madeline Pickens or her husband, T. Boone Pickens. And then And then there's no hearings, there's no pressure put on BLM, nobody's called on the carpet. What's the deal?
Well, there's a block of 40 Western senators that are going to stand in opposition to anything that's going to oppose grazing fees or have what they might consider a negative impact. One has only to look at the recent language in the transportation bill banning double-deckers from hauling horses. It was stripped out of the bill when it got to the Senate side because the quiet word behind the scenes from another number of Western senators was, if you want to get this bill passed, that will have to go. And that's how the place works. And there is no real champion for the wild horses willing to, you know, put any real political capital into the issue. And much of that stems from the fact that the problem, the magnitude of the problems with the wild horse and broke program are so serious and vast that nobody wants to take it on. It's become such a mess that people just want to avoid it. But, I mean, as I've said to a few people in Congress, that approach will only allow the problem to continue to get worse. That's how it's got this way. We're celebrating the 40th anniversary of the Wild Horse and Burro Act this year, and it's been 40 years of not much progress. Pretty much where the horse is concerned, we're always still in the wrong direction.
Looking at the larger picture, I mean, wild horse and burro issues are one issue on the public range. The much bigger issue deals with grazing. You had mentioned about the image of the rancher, you know, this the rugged individualist up by the bootstraps, sort of making it on their own out there in the wilderness kind of thing, is a little bit misleading when you realize that we taxpayers are subsidizing all of them.
Well, it's true. I mean, we take in a fraction of what it costs to run the grazing program. I forget the exact number. Craig might probably does know it exactly, but somewhere in the range of 14 or 15 million that we take in through collecting for the fee, which, by the way, has been the same since 1970, although the president has put a dollar increase in the grazing fee in his budget for this year. It's not likely to see the light of day, that increase. But that wouldn't get us to the break-even point either, even if we raised it, you know, from $1.37 to $2.37, we still wouldn't make enough money to cover it. What people have to realize is that, you know, the ranchers have a right to be out there. Ranching is a wholesome type of life. I support the ranchers. I don't think ranching is a bad thing at all. I think it's a great way to raise their children. But ranchers have to understand the public lands are just that, the public lands. They're not the domain and purview of one group of people who simply want to drive policy on a zero-sum theory game basis. It's all or nothing for everybody. That's why we can't move forward and do anything for the horses or any of the other stakeholders. It's just one long battle, and we're not winning it. It's costing more every year to do the same thing that we've been doing, and we're not making any progress. As I said, Madeline's Pickens deal does save money. It does take us in a new direction. What you've got to find is a way to get private investment in this and begin to take some of the pressure off. But I think what it will come down to, as you suggested a little while ago, George, one member in the Senate, the House, is going to have to stand up and just say to Secretary Salazar on the QT or however it has to be, look, let's go ahead and do this project. I fear that it will come to that because I'm not sure that there's enough willpower for them to see the way clear to do it. But I don't think I disagree with Craig in that somehow moving in this direction invalidates, you know, the larger issue of I agree with Craig that these are majestic animals, that they need to be saved, and our concern is just that. But under the current regime of holding horses, all of the ones on the Oklahoma border are closed to the public. There is no accountability. We said, let's create a place, one place, where the American people can come to a really nice place with a lot of amenities and see history. If we ever lose all of our horses, it'll only be these kind of places that are lost. And it's not such a remote conclusion to draw that we may lose all our horses someday. As we gather them, we're taking some of the best strains off the range. And at some point, we're going to leave a lot of sicker, unhealthy horses out there, and that could easily lead to the end of America's wild horses, and that would be a terrible tragedy.
One other issue I want to raise with you, Jerry, in the couple of minutes we have left, and that is the even if you take horses out of the equation on the public range, the whole question of the impact of grazing on these tens of millions of acres. It's like BLM, Department of Interior, they don't want to talk about that stuff. And yet, not only do the taxpayers subsidize these private operations on public lands, but we sort of overlook the terrible consequences. I mean, for not just for horses, but for deer and all kinds of other animals that live out there and the environment.
Well, that's absolutely true, George. And it's interesting that the wildlife people, and there are two members, by the way, new members on the board I just talked about, who are members of the Safari Club. And some of your listeners may know they're advocates for, you know, big-time game hunting. And it goes hand-in-hand with opposing wild horses. Again, they can't sell anything or make any money off wild horses. So now we've got two people on this board. We just had one, by the way, that was on there for I don't know how many terms, a member of the Safari Club from Nevada, and led the opposition to wild horses, you know, promoted removal, supported slaughter. This is what we get for our people who are recommending policy. But back to your questions, yeah, there's impacts to everything. And no one can make the argument that the horses don't have impacts too. They do. Everything that's out there. Again, it can't be, the game can't be rigged to support one use over everything. Everybody's got to share some of the burden. But that's not the view that people take or the economics that drive this issue. So if somebody says it's the wild horses are doing all the damage to the range, that's crazy. Most assuredly, you know, when you have millions of cattle out there and 30-some thousand horses, if that, and you make the case it's the wild horses that are doing all the range, the damage to the range, but 4 million cattle have some benign non-effect. I mean, only a fool could draw that conclusion, George.
Are you at all optimistic?
Well, you know, after 25 years of I've seen little things that happen that help in little ways. But, you know, I think I told you that I was in D.C. speaking to an old friend of mine who's been on the energy staff. I think he's at 26 years. And he said, and this was a year ago, he said, in all my time here, he said, a bill's never come to this committee to make any major changes to the Wild Horse and Burro Act. When people tell you things like that, you think, oh, my. You know, what are we up against? People recognize this program is quagmire. And yet, you know, we can go that long without a serious attempt to change it. And it begs the question, you know, have we just become so indifferent that we just tolerate things that don't work and just, and I probably, a lot of your listeners are saying, yeah, there's a good description of government. But,
well, tell our listeners what they could do if they're interested in this. I mean, does it do any good, the cliche, to call your congressman?
Oh, I mean, there's still things that work like that. I know it. Everybody's, you know, a lot of people have lost faith in government. You have to continue to do those things, George. You got to contract your senators but you know the horses really have no organized lobbying efforts. They're champions across the country, you know, that run little organizations and do a lot of good things. But, you know, they disagree themselves about a number of things. And, you know, what it will take is a concerted effort with a lot of public support, and the public support, I can't be overstated. And we could eventually get something. The NAS panel is critical. The recommendations that the National Academy of Sciences makes, you know, will be something, if it really looks at the issue fairly, that will be something you can put in your hand and take to members of the Senate, members of the House, and say, this is what the best panel of experts convened says needs to happen. But, you know, again, you that assumes that you just have an unbiased body. You know, George, I don't have a problem with there being a rancher on the National Wild Horse and Burro Advisory Board. I think there should be. But here, you've got ranching interests represented by four people of a nine-member board, one of whom fills the slot that's reverted to as the general public interest position. Well, that person is obviously not going to argue the public interest because they bring a bias to the panel. So, you know, you've got to have some fair assessments. then you've got to have, you know, a means of getting the people that can really do something about this and make changes.
Well, Jerry Reynoldson, thanks for giving us the update, and we'll certainly stay in touch about Madeline Pickens' proposal for an eco-sanctuary. Craig Downer, thanks also to you for talking to us about your new book, The Wild Horse Conspiracy. There are links to both of these gentlemen on the Coast to Coast website if you want to check them out. Up next, Peter Davenport, director of the National UFO Reporting Center, with an audacious plan. Stay with us, everyone, for more Coast to Coast AM.